This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Last night was a big night for another Clinton, comic Kate Clinton. She hosted the first gay and lesbian inaugural ball. Kate Clinton is America's best-known out-of-the-closet lesbian feminist comic, a field in which there hasn't been a whole lot of competition. Next week, she begins a national tour. Clinton began her professional life as a high school English teacher. She started performing stand-up the same year Reagan became president. So last night was the first time she ever performed during a Democratic administration, an administration supportive of gay rights.
Well, I didn't want it to happen, but we did get into a bit of Tipper bashing. I don't know how it happened, but people, many of the designer queens who were at the ball, had problems with the blue cape. The draping of the cape. It would have been, somebody said it would have been great if it was a really winter day, which it seemed like it was going to be, and then, and nobody quite liked the way the cape draped. And it was sort of antebellum. But Hillary's outfit went over very well. And I think people were just so excited to actually have something to be happy about instead of protesting. It was a really fun night.
What did you wear?
Well, I decided I could go either way, which would be a really wonderful outfit or a costume. So I think I went more toward the costume thing, and I did the mandatory gold lamé, a silver shirt which verged on mylar, and then a silvery, goldy, black kind of hairband, which I put on. And it ended up looking like I was a lesbian in distress and had inadvertently put a cummerbund on my head. But I didn't mean it that way. But I'm trying to get people to wear cummerbunds on their head. About two guys actually did during the evening.
You know, Barbara Streisand has been very big at the inaugural ceremonies, but I figured the gay and lesbian ball was the one ball she didn't have to stop by because there were probably plenty of Barbara Streisand impersonators who could have done her.
Better, actually. A lot of Evergreen was sung.
So did President Clinton stop by?
He did not stop by. Actually, I was in demand. I had to go to a lot of parties so that when people would say, was Clinton there? They could all say, yes. So it's sort of like a faux Clinton.
This reminds me, yesterday when I was announcing that you'd be on the show today, my engineer said that I should mention that you were Kate Clinton, but no relation to President Clinton. I told my engineer not to worry and that I didn't think people would believe that he had a singing brother and a lesbian feminist stand-up comic sister.
But, you know, I am going to work it. I'm going to work this Clinton thing right down to the last little gay nerve. But apparently I started off last night as Bill was my third cousin. It quickly went to first cousin, and by the end of the evening, he was my brother. So I will be working it.
So what makes you most optimistic and what makes you most skeptical about President Clinton?
What makes me most, well, given my train of thought in the last 12 years, what makes me most skeptical, I guess, is that already we've backtracked on some of the promises that he made during the campaign. I understand the rumor around here is that he's going to make some announcement on gays in the military, which began to sound like one word after a while. Gays in the military. I loved how people acted like there'd never been gays in the military, which was like, Gomer Pyle, anyone? So apparently he's going to make some announcement that in 6 months we'll say something about gays in the military. I do think that some things change. Some social change does begin in the military, but I like to think that as a movement we're a bit more progressive, and instead of a ban on gays in the military, that there would be a ban of the military so that we can use the money that we would have spent on the military and the military buildup to, you know, help domestic problems here at home, perhaps find more money for research for a cure for AIDS.
Comic Kate Clinton is my guest. Kate, has your material gotten more political over the years?
Absolutely. When I first started to perform, I had actually just come out as a lesbian or was beginning that process of coming out, so that's what I would talk about. That's what I was interested in. But as I've continued to perform, what's happened is that I'm a lesbian in the world, and the world is, anything in the world is fair game for my comment. So, and I think what I've always been interested in has been the political life. So actually, more and more, and certainly as it's needed to be commented on, I've been doing a lot more political humor.
There are certain women's audiences that show up to a performance expecting positive affirmation, support, a celebration of being a woman. This is not exactly the kind of stuff a comic does or a comic thrives on. Did that ever kind of create a tension for you?
I actually learned a lot from women's audiences. I felt that we had a sort of a moral co-editorship going. Because if I would say something, and you know, I mean, I was raised in comedy that made fun of women. And so I thought that's what we did. You know, I mean, I had some ideas that in some areas it wasn't cool to make fun of women, but in ways that I didn't even realize, things like where I would, you know, that I was looksist or weightist or all of those things, when people just didn't laugh, you do have second thoughts about it, and you never really do lines that you really want to do with any kind of confidence if there's been a dead silence the last time you did it. So I really learned things that just I didn't need to make fun of.
Can I ask you for an example of something that you threw out because it got that kind of cold, quiet reaction?
Well, I threw it out for the time being, but I did come back to it, and I find usually that if I get the right angle on it, and often the right anger on it, that you know, that it's okay to do that material. I actually had been doing something about sadomasochism, because my motto is pretty much no pain, no pain. And so, you know, and I didn't quite know. I mean, there was talk about it, and certainly there, you know, I knew it was around, but I wanted to do material about it, but I didn't know what I was talking about. So I still don't in a lot of ways, but that was something that I dropped and brought back, actually, in the contents and in the context of having children. That you know, I had a lot of friends that were going to workshops on S&M, and then other people who were going to workshops on So You Want to Have a Baby, and I thought that they should go together. They should combine the two. But it took me a while, you know, to get the right anger and the right angle on it. Things like, I'm trying to include in my material more. Many of the people in my audience are HIV, you know, or have tested positive for HIV, and part of my job, I think, is to include them. It's a very delicate thing, though,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that kind of AIDS humor, I think, is important to do because I want to include them, and yet it's so delicate.
So how do you handle that?
Well, I actually am working with a man who's just written a book about humor and HIV, as not only as a way of healing and laughing at ourselves, but he has wonderful stories, you know, stories of, you know, guys going up to guys on the street and saying, I didn't think you were here anymore. I mean, stuff like that, that is very delicate, you know, and very, you know, like guys have so few T cells, they've named them, that kind of humor. that I want to put more in my shows. And I just, it's like having the courage to do it, having the knowledge to do it. And so I there are things that I maybe would have skidded away from originally that I just need to continually work on and get in.
I guess you have to figure out where the line is between being sensitive to people in the audience but not feeling you have to do humor that's politically correct.
Right. Well, a lot of times I've done humor about, you know, like being at festivals where they've supposedly made the area accessible to people in wheelchairs, you know. But as you walk around the festivals, people are keeling out of wheelchairs because they hit bumps. And so I did something about moguls and the obstacle course for the people in wheelchairs. The people in wheelchairs loved it. People who are not in wheelchairs and got very nervous for me, you know, but the people in the wheelchairs love it mm-hmm. when you include them.
Mm-hmm.
I do jokes because frequently my shows are interpreted for the hearing impaired. And I mean, I do this one joke about that I'll be lip syncing, and it's quite a bawdy joke. But the interpreter tells me that it takes about 5 minutes to even explain what lip syncing is, first of all, and then to explain the joke. But I do, you know, I often accuse the interpreter of telling her own jokes, and, you know, you can hear the people who are hearing impaired hysterical. A really good interpreter is a person who can get the hearing impaired people to laugh on cue with the other people.
Right. Right. Yeah, that must be hard.
Mm-hmm.
Comedy is such a competitive field, mm-hmm. but there was a real kind of hole when you got started. There were very few women comics, and certainly even fewer lesbian comics. Mm-hmm. So did that give you more confidence, knowing that actually in some ways the field you were getting into was one that wasn't very crowded at all?
Well, you know, I think that in a lot of ways, ignorance was bliss. I really didn't... My growth as a comedian was very, very, very organic. And the fact that I started off in women's coffee houses, I really didn't have the knowledge of what a great gimmick I had until later, maybe 3 or 4 years later, when I would do comedy clubs on occasion and see that there were so few women there and see the ways that women are not allowed to talk about what is interesting to them, just by the very, back then, the really misogynist nature of the comedy clubs.
What were some of your experiences in regular comedy clubs outside of the women's circuit?
I generally would, within the first couple of minutes, come out in some way. And I remember doing it in Santa Monica at the Comedy Store there. And there was this dead silence. I was the most talked about in the bathroom after. But actually, during the show, you could see people translating everything through, she's a lesbian, you know. I did a show on television, I went on a talk show, and the guy went out to warm up the audience, and he said, "Now, today we've got a really special guest. She's a comedian. She's really funny. And there's something," and, you know, the audience is like, "Yay." And then he goes, "And the special thing about her is she's a lesbian." And everybody, like, their faces dropped backstage. And I thought, oh, this is going to be fun. But you can just, you know, so what I have to do is what I learned from teaching is that you have to go out and establish the areas that we are, that we have in common, and establish some kind of trust. And then they can begin to hear.
So how would you start establishing trust?
Well, I just call them on it. You know, I come out and I say, "I know you're all thinking, lesbian comedian. Ooh, great career move, dear." And so immediately it's sort of that I've been able to look into their brains and know what they're thinking. That's establishes some kind of level of trust.
You're about to tape a segment for Good Morning America.
Mm-hmm.
When you're being interviewed as, you know, lesbian feminist comic for a TV show with an enormous audience, are you going to have this feeling of kind of like representing all lesbians and having to, you know, put forward a certain image or whatever?
Oh, boy. You know what? The most exciting thing to me about it is being on with my friend Michael Callan from The Flirtations and with Harvey Fierstein. I think that I don't feel that responsibility. I feel that I'm happy to be among friends and talk. I'm really happy to be on, finally to be on a show that doesn't need to have, like, "And we need a homophobe."
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
I mean, when they have Jerry Falwell on, they don't think, well, let's get a queer here to balance things out. So I'm just sort of happy to have that. I remember hearing a story about Fannie Flagg, that years ago she was in the Miss Alabama beauty contest and she lost, and so they were crowning Miss Alabama, and apparently she came screeching out of the stands and tackled Miss Alabama from the back, and the audience loved it, and it was really, really funny. So apparently for 7 years after that, whoever they would crown for Miss Alabama, Fannie Flagg would be in the stands, and they would come and tackle and scream and, you know, wrestle the woman to the floor and try to get her crown away. So there you are in your crowning moment of glory. You're you know, crowned Miss Alabama, and you know that any second now a screeching woman is going to come and tackle you from the back. I always feel like that when I'm on television with a homophobe, that you can't really say, because any second you're going to be tackled from the back by this idiot who's going to quote the Bible to you for some unknown reason. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to being on Good Morning America because I don't have to defend myself, you know, against some homophobe from Detroit who's telling me the only reason I'm on television is because I'm a queer. And he's like, "What are you doing here, pal?"
Well, Kate Clinton, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Comedian Kate Clinton. Next week, she begins a 25-city tour. This is Fresh Air.